Is this embarrassing? Yes. Is it awkward? Yes.
No, bitch, it wasn't awkward until you made it awkward by saying awkward.
Ladies and gentlemen,
awkward.
Social podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Awkwardly Social Podcast. My name is Jose Chavez. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. If you are streaming it right now and you are wondering, why does Jose sound like he's trying to impress someone who's currently watching him do the introduction? That's because I am currently Skyping with my cousin, who is a registered nurse who has been kicking some ass and really just been dealing with a lot of fun people, I am sure, during this whole COVID pandemic. Let me welcome and introduce my cousin, Stacy. Stacy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
For sure. Now, that's the extent of the professional sounding portion. Let's get down to the gritty. Why do we have such weird and high school, middle school Skype usernames? Like, why are we being held slave to, when did you create it? How old were you?
Well, actually, you just put me on the spot. I wasn't very old. I think I was maybe about 20 when I created it. Mm-hmm. I think I was pretty stable-minded, I thought, at the time. But actually, there's a little bit more to that. My daughter's last name is Espinoza. Mm-hmm. And so all I did was pretty much translate our last names into Spanish. I mean, sorry, from Spanish to English, excuse me.
Oh, gotcha. That's fine.
In high school, sorry.
It's okay. I'm going to edit out your username so nobody hits you up. Oh yeah, so don't worry about that. But no, it's so funny. Like, I remember I got called for, I've already put mine out there more than once. I got called out for a job interview and they were like, hey, so can you shoot us over your resume? We're going to shoot you over some information. What's your email? And I was like, well, it's Josie Fancy Pants. And they're like, oh, okay. You might want to change that for your professional career, because you're not going to go anywhere with that. And I said, all right, fair enough. And they were right.
Yeah. A total of 3 emails over probably the course of my life.
Yeah. I have 3 emails now, one for my comedy, one for my professional, and one for spam. But the thing is, I rarely check them. So I'm always surprised by it. I'm like, oh, somebody wanted to interview with me or something. Or I don't know. I don't understand the point of emails at this point, because I rarely check them. So if you guys need to find me, just go ahead and hit me up on MySpace and we'll be good.
MySpace.
Yeah. No. Bring that up. So let's get a little bit into you, just a little bit. How long have you been a registered nurse? How long have you been an RN now?
So a licensed registered nurse since March of 2010. I finished nursing school in December of 2009. Very fortunate, I actually was able to start working almost right away in January of 2010, but I didn't actually take my boards until March of 2010. So a little over 10 years licensed.
Gotcha. You know, growing up, I never thought that you, I mean, I don't know, I guess we never really talked about what our hopes and dreams were, but I had no idea you were interested in being in the medical field at all. Was that something you had in mind, like, when you were younger?
Yeah, so I actually wanted to be a doctor. Growing up, it was kind of, you know, those, like, your parents always tell you you should be a doctor or a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily for me, I was always very much fascinated by science. And I probably could have taken this a different route, but I actually have a big heart for helping people, particularly when it comes to healthcare. I really feel like everyone should be entitled to healthcare. Like, it should be a basic human right. And going through, like, microbiology, taking all these, you know, classes for to become a registered nurse, kind of just my general ed, just really kind of further, like, emphasized that this was definitely the right route for me. So actually, I was a pre-med major, and then I had a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
At 18, mom at 19, and so the dreams of, you know, maybe going to medical school and the demands of that really kind of just changed my perspective. And I'm not trying to say I downgraded to an extent. You know, I took an easier route, but I wouldn't change that for the world. The contact, the degree of contact that I have with my patients and, you know, is definitely a lot more, I think, than if I was actually a doctor. We come from different kind of perspectives when it comes to practice. And so I definitely think this is, the right match for me.
Yeah, that's nothing to, the fact that you went to medical school at all for any reason is, first of all, very admirable. And we all calibrate. We all need to adjust. I mean, no matter how well laid out our plans are, things are going to get in the way and we have to make adjustments. So I would say that you're still very much involved. You may not be a doctor, but you still are doing a lot. I mean, and also from what I'm led to understand, it seems like the brunt of the work is done by the RNs and the nurses. It's more than the doctors. The doctors are great with diagnosing, and surgeons are good with cutting people up. But I feel like a lot of the grunt work is done by the RN.
Yeah. There's definitely kind of a joke amongst healthcare workers, and I can definitely say it because, it's like whether there's nurses or other, doctors in any field listening, it's kind of like nurses call the shots. And I've been really lucky to have like these really great, not just friendships, but definitely partnerships with my colleagues. And, we have residents and what they consider a senior nurse, whatever that means. But definitely experience. And so it's really nice to be able to come and say like, hey, this patient's going down and you want to do this, this, and this, and this, and, or would you like to do this, this, and this, and this? And they're very receptive. Ultimately it's not even about who's saying do what, who's calling the shots, who's giving the orders. It's definitely in the emergency room, a very much a collaborative effort. I'm working side by side with these physicians, with these other nurses. We can identify when a patient's doing, not doing so well, and respond, get the doctors on board and say, hey, you know what, this is happening. Let's do this and let's save this patient's life. But we do definitely do a lot of the work. I think I'd have a very long resume if I were to actually write down everything that I do as a nurse.
Yeah.
But it's a good question.
That's good. I'm glad. It sounds like, at least it's collaborative and you guys are all, everyone is working together. And once everyone knows, I'm assuming their position or what their responsibilities are, makes it a lot easier versus everybody bumping into each other. I don't know. I've never been a part of anything like that. I think the most collaborative thing I ever did was be the fry cook at Del Taco. So I don't know.
It's a little bit different. Just a little bit.
Just a little. Just a smidge.
Yeah. You have to tone your ego down just a bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. By the way, I won't fuck with Del Taco anymore. Not that their food's terrible, but it's just like PTSD. Yeah. I'm just like, the things you do as a teenager. No, I had posted this thing on Instagram and Facebook, and I got a few questions, and if your question doesn't get read, I'll be honest, some of them I was just like, I'm not going to ask that. So a lot of you asked the same exact same questions, which is very amusing to me. So we just kind of boiled it down to like five or six questions altogether. We're, of course, talking about COVID-19. We're all in quarantine because of this crazy-ass pandemic. That seems to be a lot of people are figuring it out. A lot of countries that aren't ours are kind of getting their shit together. And while there are some states that are doing better than others, California is not doing too well. And I can honestly say I'm not surprised based on the social media posts that I'm seeing. I like recently unfollowed people that weren't wearing masks, that were going out and partying every single day and living their life. I was like, you know what? I'm like, it's not a jealousy thing. It's 100% like I can't respect you as a human if you are taking the kinds of chances you're taking so that you can have a good day, but it might indirectly result in the loss of life for someone else. Like, that is very selfish. So my cousin and I started talking a little bit about it, and I asked her if she would hop on. And of course, you were happy to do so, and I appreciate that. So we're going to get to the questions in just a little bit, but real quick, before we get to those questions, is there anything I already passed them by you. Is there anything that wasn't covered in them that you might want to address right now?
Well, I do kind of want to start off with a little bit of a disclaimer. COVID has just become such a sensation. It very well should be. I'm not trying to minimize that. It's not a pressing issue, that it's not something we all need to be working on in terms of like reducing transmission, et cetera. But I kind of want you guys to understand that I am coming at you from an ER nurse's perspective, an ER nurse that works in LA, that has the privilege and the burden of working with different social classes, people from, you know, who are social economically disadvantaged as well as very privileged. And so with that being said, I am giving you, my response is not just based on what I've seen, the trends that I'm seeing, but also, you know, as an educated professional who has, you know, who does periodically go through the CDC website and say like, what are we putting out there? So stuff that you see in the media may or may not necessarily reflect the things that I'm seeing in the ER. And so I think it's important to understand that, that you might hear certain things from media, like, well, that's not what I saw on social media posts. That's not what I saw on whatever news outlet you follow. I'm going to tell you what I'm seeing. That's the perspective that I'm coming from. And it's what physicians and nurses and other healthcare professionals are collaborating. And just remember that medicine is a science, and it's something that we work on every single day. We don't have it down. We are human, and medicine has actually always been kind of just this really long experiment, right? Sometimes we get it right and sometimes we don't. So just kind of keep an open mind to that.
Yeah. And I'll give one disclaimer that I'll say, based off an example, I tend to do this where I put like a personal experience as an example. But one thing that I noticed was there was a period of time where I'm trying to generalize this so I don't make it too personal, because there's some people who didn't have exactly the best performance here. But there was someone who was very sick in the hospital who was passing away. She was elderly, but she was, you know, her time was coming, and unfortunately was not ideal for the family. And there was several nurses who were dealing with this whole thing, who this family was continuously yelling at them, was yelling at them for not showing enough emotion, for not doing what they thought was enough. And then at one point, I kind of snapped at them, at the family. And I told them, like, look, these are not just professionals, but these are people who it's their job to be focused, to get things done, to keep a cool head so that they make all the right decisions. It's not that they're being unsympathetic. It's not that they have no empathy when it comes to your situation. This is just what they need to do in order to be able to focus on taking care of your loved ones. Like, you don't want a panicky, emotional person doing the things that you need them to do. So be respectful and stop putting pressure on them just a little bit, please and thank you. I think that's one of the biggest problems is, again, going back to ego, is just the individual always gets so worked up that they don't realize that they are the cause of some of the stress, not just the performance of the job. You know, the life and death aspect. It seems like there's people who just cannot control their own fucking, just calm the fuck down, people, please and thank you.
Well, right. You know what? Thank you so much for addressing that. I want everyone to know that, you know, ER nurses, we kind of have a reputation about us. We definitely have a certain way of dealing with things. We have very dark humor. You know, we're a different type of breed.
You need to be.
Not just any. Yeah, absolutely. Not anyone could be an ER nurse. And one minute I can be delivering a baby in a car, and the next minute, you know, I am holding your dying grandmother's hand. And so we go from one extreme to the other. There's a lot of, you know, giving my dad lauded in between, getting yelled at, cursed at. But you don't maybe know us on a personal level, but you know a little bit about me. I'm a mom. I'm a sister. I'm a daughter. I'm a cousin. I'm a wife. I'm a friend. And so I may look cute, you know, cool as a cucumber on the outside, but on the inside, I am making those connections. On the inside, you know, it's hard for me to code a baby when I know that I have a brand new baby at home. It's hard for me to see that 16-year-old who wants to kill herself and attempted an overdose on her antidepressants, because I have a 16-year-old. I know life is hard. I have a mom who has cancer, and I know what that process is like, not just for her, but as a daughter. And so I want you guys to know that when you do see us, like looking like maybe we don't give a shit, that's kind of our thinking phase. It's our working phase. And on the inside, a lot more can be going on. We are making those connections. We are so human. We really do care, contrary to what we're putting out there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, kudos to you. I mean, if there was a bumper sticker that says my cousin's an RN, I would slap that on a car if I had a car. But no, I'm very proud of you, and I'm glad. And I won't get into any of the embarrassing shit from when we were kids. Not in this episode, don't worry. No, every now and then I mention something, I'm just like, you know what? I try to make it more about me. I don't want to spill anyone else's beans. But let's go ahead and get to these questions. Let's see here. The first one I sent you was, does a mutated virus mean we can get sick more than once?
So that's a really tough question to answer. And I'm going to say ultimately, yes. Viruses are amazing in their ability to change. You kind of have to look at it as, you know, you just turned in this thesis paper, whatever, that's like a million pages, and you had a typo. It could be a comma, a colon, you know, a transpose, consonant, vowel, whatever. The point is, you put something there that wasn't supposed to be there, and it actually changes the genetic makeup of the virus a lot. You know, we see it in humans as like congenital disorders. And so the way our system works, in particular when it comes to like creating antigens and antibodies, B cells, T cells, they attack these viruses, they attack these bacteria. But what they do is they develop these little kind of memory cells that recognize a particular protein. I know I'm getting all science-y.
That's okay. Pretty much,
pretty much what I'm trying to say is it recognizes, like, for example, you know, like, oh, this is Stacy. This is how tall she is, how much she weighs. So guess what? We're like a bouncer at a club. Anytime, you know, this girl that looks like Stacy comes in, you know, this Hispanic, 5'6", not going to go into my weight, whatever, comes in, we're going to kick her out. Like, she's not in. We're fighting her. That's what they do. And so with enough change, so pretty much I can go get, like, prosthetics, get a nose job, do my hair differently. Those are all kind of superficial things, but I can change enough where those memory cells wouldn't recognize me. And so in the future, I could get back into the club looking a little different. So the short answer is yes. Technically, I could change enough where I could re-attack the system as a virus or even a bacteria. It's also important to remember that these B cells and T cells only have like a life of like 90 days. So I know there's just a concern because like some university in London dropped this study saying like you can get reinfected with COVID. I mean, yeah, we don't have enough research on there saying that you can't, but potentially because of the information that we do know about viruses and bacteria and mutation, after a 90-day period, you know, your body's like, oh, you know, we're out of danger. We don't need to reproduce any more of these cells. Like this whole, you know, we've achieved balance or homeostasis, as we call it. I could reinfect the body and you wouldn't recognize me. You totally forgot who I was after 90 days.
Gotcha.
So there is a risk of reinfection.
Okay. That's okay. So I'm, if I can get some holy water and some prayers going for me, cause I am now like, oh shit. No. No, I really am. Thank you for explaining that, by the way. There's a Jesus. What am I trying to think of? I lost my train of thought. What you said was so concise and so like just direct that I was like, oh, I got nothing. I got nothing to add. I'm sure I'll have questions afterwards. But for now, let's go to the next question. I'm sure I'll ask you to double back and elaborate a little bit more. This one is okay. So this one is a real criticism that was on it, like a YouTube video. So I know that's why this one's being asked. Why don't we see more people like in the ERs or in the, what is that thing called where you go in the day of,
same day surgery?
No, not surgery. Like when you just have like a little bit of a, like you got a cough and you go in urgent care. Why don't you see more people in urgent care or ER just sick and coughing? Like people's theory is like, well, there should be a line out the door if it's really as bad as all that. What is your response to that?
My response is I want to put on a pair of boxing gloves and punch you in the face. just because, I mean, really, if you're walking into an ER and you're seeing it's quiet, like you should be really scared. So I'm glad people are asking this question, and I'm glad that we have the opportunity to come back and say, stop being so stupid. The reason that you're not seeing these waiting rooms that are like overflowing with people is because of the fact that although it took us a really long time to even, you know, kind of mobilize and say, you know, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do, we should all be wearing masks, et cetera, to reduce the risk of transmission. A lot of hospitals in California, what they've done is, and not just hospitals, but urgent cares and other, you know, medical facilities, what they've done is they've said, hey, no more visitors. Okay. So when you walk into an ER, maybe pre-COVID days, we call them, and there's like 10 people sitting down in the waiting room having McDonald's and like just seriously partying it up in our waiting room, that's all like 10 people that came to see their grandma. Mm. You know, or three people that are waiting because, you know, the mom needs a ride home and we're supposed to discharge her 30 minutes before or whatever. The point that I'm trying to make is a lot of time these people that you're seeing in waiting rooms, they're not the patient. They're patient, family, friends, et cetera, et cetera. Now, for most facilities, at least in the state of California, it's if you're not the patient, go away. Really, it's our way of trying to reduce the risk of transmission, because if you're not, you know, let's say you came because you just dislocated your shoulder. We've triaged you. We pretty much screened you and said, okay, you don't have to go to a respiratory or a section where we're concerned that you may have COVID symptoms. You can go this route, right? You can go down route A, what we call the clean non-respiratory route. Well, guess what? If we didn't screen someone appropriately, or someone forgot to mention, because I don't know how this happens, that they've been having fever and chills for 3 days, and a cough and et cetera, et cetera, you've now not just exposed yourself, but also your family member who's now going to go outside and now reinfect potentially like, you know, 10, 20 more people exponentially. So sorry, getting back to the question, the people that you're seeing in the waiting rooms now are the people that need to be there. It's right. Not the family members. It's not the visitors. So that's why they look empty.
Okay. That makes sense. And honestly, I was thinking about that. I was like, usually when I'm in a waiting room, I'm waiting for someone else. I'm waiting for Linda. I'm waiting for, you know, a relative. I'm giving somebody a ride and picking them up or whatever. You're absolutely right. I've never been in a waiting room as somebody needs to be seen as a patient. And when I go in as a patient, I'm usually not in the waiting room for very long at all.
I mean, think about it. I can only speak from like a Latino perspective or standpoint, but you know, how many times have we heard like, oh my God, grandma's in the hospital. And it's like, we're all driving an hour, 45 minutes, whatever, you know, to go make sure she's okay. Like really like 500 people didn't need to be in that waiting room.
No, but that's what happens when you birth many children.
Yes.
All right. If the virus is on your mask, it's on your eyes and skin. Can't we get sick anyway?
No. Okay. So the way that these, it's called droplet transmission. We have different ways of transmitting diseases, you know, STDs, that's one way of, you know, transmitting disease. So with droplet, the virus is in the saliva that comes out of your mouth when you speak. And so it's also in your secretions, whether it's, you know, tears from your eyes or snot from your nose. And so if it's on your face, your skin is one of the largest organs on your body, and it does an amazing job at keeping things out. We literally have to cut it, you know, scratch it, or in some ways compromise its makeup to be able to get germs on the inside. But we have these things called eyes, and we have a nose, and we have a mouth. And so when we start touching our faces, the stuff that was on our mask, the stuff that was on our hands, the stuff that was on our face is now in our eyes, in our nose, in our mouth, and now we've introduced the coronavirus, for example, or the bacteria into a nice, wet, warm passageway, I guess you can say. It got to where it needed to be to now enter the body. Yeah. So as long as you're not touching your face, you know, you're not messing with your eyes, you're not picking your nose, you're not like putting your hand in your mouth without washing them first. I mean, really, as an adult, you shouldn't be putting your hand in your mouth. But unless you're doing those things, your skin is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. It's keeping shit out.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. So I touch my face a lot. I currently put my hands in my pockets as you said that, because I am a face toucher. I touch my face a lot, you know, and then that's one of my concerns. When I'm wearing a mask in public, sometimes I'll bring it down to my chin and bring it back up, or I'll unhook it. And now I'm being told, don't hang it on your chin, because if you got COVID on your chin, it'll bring it up to your mouth. There's a bunch of different things that are being said. Have you seen or heard anything? This one's not on the list. This one's just one that I remembered. Anything at all that says that that the sun could be eating down on something can kill the bacteria a little bit?
Yes. And so there's actually some truth behind that. We know that UV light does a great job at killing viruses and bacteria. There's a ridiculous amount of viruses and bacteria, different strains, et cetera. So we know that it works against most of them. Not necessarily 100%, but it does a really damn good job. And so the thought process behind, hey, you know what, I'm going to leave my mask hanging from, you know, my rearview mirror, and now it's getting the sun, and that's going to, or the UV rays from the sun, and now that's going to kill it. There's some truth to that, but the honest, the real answer behind that is you have to have a certain degree of UV light to be able to kill all those bacteria.
Gotcha.
So it does do its job. It doesn't kill 100% of those. You do need a different wavelength and so forth to be able to kill all of that. So do not think this is like a foolproof way of getting rid of the coronavirus on your mask. It's not.
Gotcha. So sunbathing isn't going to cure you. It's just you getting a tan.
So no, it's just going to give you skin cancer.
Yeah, no, we don't want that. Not at all. You would think that just because, you know, people are like, you're Hispanic, you don't have to worry about it. I'm like, I have a little more hue to us maybe, but we're still susceptible.
Yes.
Let's take a look here. How long after you're better is it safe to go back around people?
So initially we were saying 14 days, and that answer has changed a little bit. You could always go back to the CDC for this, but we're saying that it depends. Anyone who's had like moderate symptoms, like let's say, for example, you know, a pretty healthy, let's say 36-year-old female with, you know, maybe a runny nose, I spiked a fever for a couple of days, but that went away. Not really having any other respiratory symptoms. We would say that's like a mild to moderate case. Usually after 10 days, you can come out of self-quarantine. Someone who's had more severe symptoms, that person we're saying 20 days. And the reason behind that is some kind of still young and immature research has shown that the virus can actually live about 21 to 28 days. That's the whole lifespan of the virus. And so depending on where you are in the lifespan of the virus also determines how infectious you can be. That's kind of what we chose 14 as a happy medium number. For those people that are the mild to moderate cases, you should already kind of be past the point where you can transmit the disease. And for those people who have a more moderate kind of condition, what we normally would recommend 20 days, you know, we're thinking after 14 days, you have less of a chance of transmitting the disease.
Gotcha.
Who decides this? Honestly, usually a doctor. So please call your doctors and, you know, have a conversation with them, even if it is just a phone teleconference, whatever, and decide, you know, what is the best time, number of days, excuse me, to self-quarantine. But we're saying anywhere from 10 to 20 days.
Yeah. So let's take a look here. Thank you very much for answering that. Is it still based on your age or health conditions, or can anyone get it?
So, this is obviously still something that's being researched? So the answer, the quick answer to that is, depending on your age and any pre-existing medical conditions, pretty much saying if you're immunocompromised, you're more likely to get sick from COVID. And the truth of the matter is, if you're immunocompromised, you're more likely to get sick from anything, not just COVID. The younger, the healthier you are, the least likely you will get COVID, just because your body just does a much better job at kind of fighting some of these things off before you even realize you were sick or infected. We in the United States not really testing children, so I couldn't come back at you and say, oh, children aren't being infected. In the past week, we've seen a higher number of children who are coming back positive with COVID and symptomatic. We're seeing babies being born COVID positive. And so the young, the sick, the elderly, and pregnant women are what we consider immunocompromised. Those are the people that are most likely going to get sick. Mm-hmm. Not to say you can't get sick and can't transmit it, but for the most part, you know, if you're around that patient kind of population, if you're going to be around those type of people, even if you're healthy, please just be mindful, wear your mask, mind your social distancing, because even if your family or your really good friends or you don't know the neighbors really, really well, it doesn't friggin' matter. Like, we need to be still minding social distancing rules.
Yeah. So, what have you been seeing in the hospitals? Like, this one's not on the list. This one's just one that, I think just through conversation that kind of inspired this. Hold on. Let me double back before I even go back to that question. You have a child at home.
I have two.
Yes. So
okay. A young child.
Yeah. Yeah. So, So, because you have kids at home and one so very young, and one who's a teenager who's getting ready to say, I hate you, mom. I'm going to go hang out with my friends. Assuming she hasn't already said that. Is there anything you do in terms of like self quarantining when you're dealing with patients, when you're dealing with COVID patients or anything like that? Like any extra steps you're taking to keep yourself and your family safe? Essentially things that people can do themselves. Is there anything a routine you have to try to keep yourself safe?
So yes, my routine is maybe, different from most people in that when I first went back to work, my baby was only 5 months old. This was back in April. So I got a lot of crap from my coworkers, like really stays like right in this middle of this pandemic. That's also because we thought, you know, it was going to be over in June. Mm-hmm. So I used to go to work with like my yoga pants and my workout shirt underneath my uniform. So when I was done at work, I'd literally just take off my uniform, or strip down to my other set of clothes and put everything in this like waterproof bag, get home, go straight to the garage, throw it in the washer and sanitize it. Pretty much put it in sanitize mode on my washer and hop straight into the shower. Didn't have any contact with my baby until I was like showered.
Hey guys, so I'm going to go ahead and do this quick introduction because we, unfortunately, the equipment stopped recording, so we had to pick up where we left off. We actually got in a good additional 10 minutes of audio that unfortunately will never see the light of day because it was not recorded. So we are going to be setting up a re-recording, essentially, during this thing. So if it sounds like we are kind of getting caught back up again, it's because we actually are. That was great. I just explained to them that the audio cut off, and I really am a little bit pissed off because you gave such an impassioned speech at the end that it was like, I mean, somebody hand you an Oscar. That was powerful. I was like, oh man, like that was so good. If you can hand out an Emmy for a podcast, we would have gotten it for that one. No, but it's cool. It's fine. We have the time, and thankfully we got through all the questions that we had gotten written down. But you were in the middle of, you had just explained how you the process you go through to sanitize yourself to make sure you don't bring it home. You mentioned how you put your clothes to wash immediately. That you have no contact with your kid until after you do all the appropriate steps, shower and all of that. So we got to that point. in the recording, and then it stupidly stopped recording. By the way, right now, just to make sure that we prepared, I put in a new SIM card. So in case this we need to run long, we have about 30 hours of recording space. So
let's do it.
Yeah, so we are good.
So I think you were asking what, like, I guess listeners or, you know, general public can do in terms of like how they can stay safe. I did recommend don't bring your outside shoes in. Uh-huh. You know, people do nasty stuff. They spit on the floor. They do all kinds of things. And so what you're doing is you're introducing that into your home when it's in the bottom of your shoes. So recommendation is to maybe leave your shoes outside, use a pair of loafers or some kind of other sandals that aren't going outside. Good hand washing is number one. I think I probably should have started with that. 20 seconds of good hand washing. And we're not talking like, you know, 20 seconds total between lather and rinse. Like, you want to like scrub your hands, like top and bottom, between the nails, get underneath those nails, except for those people who eat their nails, then you'll be fine. So just really good hand washing is super important. Wear your mask. Learn how to appropriately remove a mask so that you're not getting those COVID germs or anything else that's on the outside of the mask on your hand and then touching your face. And the social distancing aspect of it. You know, maybe it's kind of hard to visualize, you know, a 6 foot person, like, or what 6 feet around you looks like. But you know, just kind of like, can you fit a person between you and the person in front of you, next to you, behind you? You know, that's kind of a good way to think of it. And if you're questioning, oh man, is this person too close? They probably are too close. So if you're in a place where you've been doing a lot of like grocery shopping, picking up a lot of stuff outdoors, hey, when you get home, take those, you know, take that shirt off, take that sweater off, and put on a new one, put on a clean one, hop into the shower if you need to, rinse all that stuff off.
Gotcha. What about spraying Lysol into the air and just walking into it?
So, you know, that's kind of how I apply my perfume. so, yes, it's all over me. So here's the thing. Lysol actually has to kind of sit on there and really dry off for a while before it actually works. And so you probably shouldn't be inhaling too many of those fumes in the first place. Remember, it is an aerosolized item. So I would recommend maybe Lysol, putting Lysol on your shoes, the ones that you're going to leave outdoors. You know, if you have to reuse something for work, like let's say, you know, they give you 3 uniforms for work for the work week, spray that down. Like, I'm pretty sure that'd be fine. But that's a lot of chemicals in Lysol. Maybe you shouldn't necessarily be applying it directly to your skin. Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's a warning label for that.
Yeah. And there's a, I'll make this recommendation. I didn't bring this up earlier, but they do. So Lysol has like an additive that you can put into your washer. So they have a Lysol essentially for a pre-wash in your washer. That's an additive that you put in there, and it's specifically for laundry. You know, and I've been using that, and I don't know how effective it is. It hasn't done damage to my clothes. Don't mix it with the detergent, put it in a separate wash, but it's supposed to sanitize your clothes. So that's something I would look into a little bit. Just maybe.
Yeah. That was an option, but
yeah. But don't be lazy.
I do kind of run an empty wash with bleach.
Okay.
So, you know, between loads, like between my uniform, for example, and before I let anyone else use the washer, just because I'm, you know, a little paranoid that I don't know what's killing it yet. So just in case, let's do this anyways.
Yeah, that's great to know. So I hate to ask you to do this one more time just because it was kind of a heavy question. But so we can wrap it up and make sure that we put that part in there. The things that we were talking about as far as, you know, the people you're seeing in the hospital, the personal experience that you're having with them. If you could just reiterate that, you can shorten it as much as you want, but just something to kind of let them know, like the human aspect of what you're dealing with once you're in there.
So we had talked about these oh shit moments, like people coming up and saying like, oh shit, I didn't know this was real. And so I was commenting to the fact that a lot of people are having these oh shit moments, like obviously too late. Yeah, we usually do with oh shit moments. But it's when we realize that it's hit us close to home. It's when I mentioned the whole death and dying process. It's when I'm holding your grandmother's hand and she's intubated and she can't talk, but she can look at me. And we have that understanding that I'm drowning. Like, I cannot breathe. I know I'm dying. I know these are my final moments. And it's when you can't say goodbye to your grandmother or your mom or your auntie or maybe even your wife, your daughter, when that person is gone forever and you had just dropped her off in the emergency room, him or her off in the emergency room, you know, just maybe an hour prior, that's when you realize, oh shit, it's real. When that person doesn't come home to you anymore, that's when you say, oh shit, it's real. When, you know, you went to that party, to that barbecue because you were super confident that, you know, everyone was doing their social distancing the right way, and now you come down with COVID. And I don't quite remember, you know, what I said and before it wasn't recording, but what you need to do is practice a little empathy, a little bit of kindness, and do it for other people. Like, it isn't just about you. It is about the people around you. I mentioned, let's not politicize these masks. It's not about, well, I have the right. You have a fucking right. Yes, you do. But it's about kindness, guys. It's about taking care of one another. It's about looking out for one another. And I'm not asking you to hug this like complete stranger. No, but what I'm asking you is keep your mask on, keep your distance. Because I don't want to be the last person that your grandfather sees before he dies. I'm tired, guys. Like, I really am tired. They're dying all the time. And you guys are seeing numbers on TV. You guys are seeing California has the highest number of, you know, coronavirus cases. But you're not the one who's intubating them. You're not the one who's holding the hands. You're not the one who's pushing meds. You're not the one who's doing chest compressions for hours. You're not doing any of this. I am. I'm seeing this.
No.
So my takeaway for you guys is it's real. I'm telling you it's real. It's not a conspiracy. No. Please wear your mask. Please wash your hands. Please social distance. Keep 6 feet away from each other. We got to do this right because you guys are tired of being home. And I'm tired of the counts that we do every day. I'm tired of the next morning coming in and saying we had X number of deaths. We have X number of new cases. Yeah. We're all tired, guys, and we can do this together.
Two things you mentioned were you were talking about those who are sick, who are ones that aren't going out, like the mom who or the grandma who stays home and her family comes and visits and brings food. And you also mentioned about the fact that when a person passes, they can't even have the family can't come see the body. They can't come collect the body. You want to just reiterate on that just a little bit?
Yeah. So here's the thing, because this is all still so new, we're not sure if the virus can transmit after a person dies. And I'm pretty sure that all you guys who are like, oh, zombie apocalypse are like going to be all over this, but we really don't know like how long this virus survives after the host dies. And so what's happening is that hospitals aren't releasing the bodies to the mortuaries and then to the families right away. We have bodies that are being like pretty much on overflow in our mortuary, you know, or our morgue, excuse me. They're on overflow in the mortuaries. They don't know what to do with them. And so your grandmother could have died in June and we're towards the end of July and you're not going to get the body back. And sometimes your only option to be able to give your family member, your loved one, a proper burial is to cremate them. And that may or may not go with your kind of, you know, belief systems of like the dying death process and afterlife and so forth. And so that's something that I want you guys to think about is that you dropped your grandma, you dropped your grandmother off. And then guess what? 2-3 months later, you're not even being able to give her this proper burial. In terms of like, not to switch so abruptly, but in terms of like the whole, I was saying that the people that we're seeing, we are seeing a lot more, you know, 25 to 40 year olds that are coming in that are now infected with COVID. Luckily for them, some of them are younger, and, you know, age and better health is on your side. And maybe you have some of these mild symptoms that we talked about earlier, but it's, you know, your grandma, your grandpa, your mom, your dad, your uncle, your aunt that are staying home, and, you know, they're not going grocery shopping because they know, hey, you know what, I'm immunocompromised. But guess who is doing their grocery shopping? You're doing their grocery shopping. Your sister's bringing, you know, bringing all the Costco and you know, Vallarta stuff home. Like, but if you're not doing it right, you're bringing it to them. And that's who we're seeing. And so when I go and I tell, you know, your grandma, like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, you know, your test came back positive. You have COVID. You guys, this is a death sentence. This is kind of like hearing you have cancer. They're like, no, but I can't. They're in denial. I didn't go out. I always wash my hands. I always wore my mask. Like, my kids bring me all my stuff. Yeah, guys, you just gave your grandma, your grandpa, your loved one a death sentence. If they are that immunocompromised that they've been having to stay home. So think about that.
Yeah, that's a lot to think of. Again, we were going on about this regarding empathy, just being sympathetic. It's always so, because you can't see it, everyone's always so dismissive of it, you know. And then there is sort of there's two extremes of those who are incredibly terrified of it. I think I would rather be on the side of being overly cautious than not at all, because that means that it's not just taking care of myself, those around me, but your people. If I run into somebody if I'm not taking care of myself and I go out for a walk and someone's walking by in the opposite direction, and, you know, suddenly I have a chance of getting them sick. We went for a walk and there was some asshole outside who was just smoking a cigarette and blowing it out and, you know, into the air, not wearing a mask. And you're just like, okay, that guy's being an asshole because he wants to feel better in that moment, but now he's risked my health, you know, my family's health, all because he needs to have a cigarette. Like, it's always that, like, that one moment of like, let me just go out and see my friends or my family, go blow out a fucking candle on a birthday cake, blowing air into the fucking ether. You know, there's things that we're doing that used to be so minimal and it's not that big a deal. And now these things are a death sentence. Again, thanks so much for this. I'm sorry that we had to have you hop back on again, because you got a 16-year-old to deal with and an infant, you know, and especially the 16-year-old. Because let's be honest, teens are kind of assholes. yeah, just a little bit. I sent Nerf guns to my nephews in Oregon, and so they can shoot each other up and stuff. And then my sister's like, yeah, one of them loves it. The other one's being very much a teenager. I was like, okay, that sounds about right. That's usually how that goes. But yes, thank you so much. Take care, stay safe. And then when everything's back on track, I'm sure we'll have a big old family reunion, but several feet apart. I think we need to rent like a whole park in order to get everybody to fit in there. And if we're going to keep them all like distant from one another, I mean, we might need Dodger Stadium and just keep everyone like 6 seats apart.
Yeah. You know, guys, I mean, these stores are doing a great job. They're putting fucking tape on the floor. Like, just stand on the line, stand on the X. Don't stand right behind me in line, because you know what? I will tell you, hey, take a few steps back and don't be afraid to do that. Don't be afraid to be like, hey, you know what? Can you please step back a bit? Take care of yourselves so that we can take care of each other.
They should allow grocery store employees to like attack a customer if like a customer is not wearing a mask, or if they're getting too close. Like, you know, when you see those things where they're acting out, like I feel like if somebody who's bagging my groceries is seeing someone else take off their mask and spit into the air or do something stupid like that, I feel like that the bagger should have the right in his title and his responsibility to just knock that person the fuck out, wash their hands for 20 seconds, and then come back to take care of my stuff.
Yeah, and be completely free of any liability.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be like, you know what? No, you're safe. You're spared. It's part of your job. And I mean, it's only fair, I think. And I don't know. I think I'm just, I'm not saying go around and beat people up for not wearing masks, but I'm saying that if somebody's being an asshole, you got to tell them what's what. But I mean, like an aggressive asshole, not like somebody who's just being a verbal one, because that's, you know, some people are just stupid. But I loved your idea of take an idiot to work day so you can take someone with you. That would be great. I feel like they need to put cameras on you guys during this time. And I know it's hard because you don't want extra people in there, but like a body, like they should put body cams on nurses and on RNs, like to take care of these things, like the way they do for police. So that way you can go back and see exactly what they're dealing with and know that it's a real, very real situation.
Yeah, guys, this isn't a conspiracy. This is really real. I've been a nurse for over 10 years and I've never seen anything like this. And I can tell you, like, this has nothing to do with whether you're right wing, left wing, you know. I mean, I'm not making any money. I don't have any stocks in face masks or any kind of meds. Like, I'm just, it's real, guys.
Yeah.
And there's more deaths now than when I went back in April. And we do need to do our part. Yeah. It's real.
I hope you get to take a break. I hope you I know that your job is to save people, to help people. But I hope you take like a good couple weeks off soon and just, you know, spend time with your family. Although I know that spending time with your family at home for 2 weeks in itself isn't really a vacation, because then you want to run back to work. I get that. But, you know, stay safe. Take care of yourself. And yeah, let's go ahead and wrap this up. Thank you again. And we'll talk soon. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye, guys. Thanks.
Bye now. So that happened. That was, thankfully, we were able to go back and finish our conversation. So, yeah, we caught up on everything that we missed. And there was, you know, we sort of compressed the ending down to 10, 20 minutes versus what it was before. But we were able to get, you know, everything back on track there. So thank you so much for listening. I apologize if there's like a random abruption in the middle of it. I just wanted to make sure that we went back and touched base on everything that we had gone over, because it's important. I mean, we've talked about this, you know, with previous guests, talking about the things we're doing to take care of ourselves at home, the things that we're doing to keep ourselves safe with our loved ones, the things that we're doing just to kind of pass the time to keep ourselves sane. But there is, you know, behind that, there is a people who are in desperate need of taking care of, being taken care of, and those who unfortunately just can't be saved, try as you might, or rather try as they might. So, you know, give a little bit of love and shout out and respect to the nurses. And when you're at the hospital and you're dealing with things and you want to see your family, I understand the severity of it, the frustration, the I wish I could just fix this thing immediately kind of thing, and the things that you want them to do. Be a little more kind. Have more empathy than you're currently displaying, because you don't want to fluster somebody who's trying to save your loved one. You can't be mad at them if they don't succeed, because some stuff is out of their hands. Some stuff is out of their control. I mean, technically, the safety and the health of your family, of your loved ones, is in your hands way before it's in theirs. And if you're not taking care of them before they get to the hospital, you can't blame or punish someone else once they're there. You know, it's hard, because you don't want to say, hey, feel fucking shitty about this. But essentially, yeah, you should feel a little bit shitty. You mean, it's a tough spot. And we all need to do our part. It's not easy. I wish it was. I wish there was an end date to this where we can all resume life. But I mean, this is the way that it's impacted us globally. I mean, it's something you got to consider. That's it. Thank you so much for downloading. Follow me on social media at I am Jose Chavez. If you have any more questions, we might do a follow-up episode for this. Go ahead and email josechavezcomedian@gmail.com. put in the subject podcast COVID or something. And then just if you have any questions or comments, something you feel we didn't go over, you know, we could do a follow-up episode and kind of continue the conversation. If you want to leave a voicemail, whether or not I play it back on the air, you know, you can go ahead and say, hey, this is safe to play. This is not. However you want to do it, you can be as anonymous as you want. This phone number is specifically for the podcast. It comes straight to me, no one else. It is phone number 818-697-0050. That is how you can reach me. Again, the email is josechavezcomedian@gmail.com. Social media at @IamJoseChavez. This is available at awkwardlysocialcomedy.com to check out old episodes. Do me a favor. If you have any friends or family, anybody that is kind of wondering, having questions about COVID and needs some kind of information, go ahead and share this podcast with them. There's different links at awkwardlysocialcomedy.com for the platforms that you can share it on. And the actual audio file is on the page itself. So you take care. Have a great week. More new episodes coming up soon. Thank you very much and take care.